One of the things that continually draws me to reading the Bible is the way I suddenly see something new in a passage that I thought I knew well. You know, I'll read a text, one I've read or heard 100 times over my life, and then suddenly there's something brand new there for me. And I think that sometimes that is the result of the power of another element in the reading. I liken this going to a party that's thrown by someone who's lively and funny and extremely outgoing. And you walk into the room and I find myself paying attention to them because they're interesting and they're attractive. And they just dominate the room. And later on in the evening, I find myself sitting next to someone who is no less fascinating. They're just quieter. But they might even be more interesting, but I don't notice them at first because of the robust personality of the host. And I had something of that experience in reading today's gospel reading from John chapter 10. When I read it, I always get hooked on verse 11, "I am the good shepherd." Now verses 1 to 18 of chapter 10 are typically read as a whole. And I glom onto "I'm the good shepherd," I think, because the metaphor of shepherding is the key metaphor in that passage. And by nature of the fact that I'm a pastor and I'm therefore by definition in the shepherding business, I'm especially attracted to stuff about shepherds in the Bible. But in preparing for a sermon of a couple of weeks ago, Jesus claim in John chapter 15 that I am the true vine, I spent some time looking at all of the 8 I am statements that John makes in John's gospel. You know, things like, "I am the bread of life," "I am the light of the world," "Before Abraham was, I am," and so on. And in that list, I noticed also that, you know, "I am the good shepherd." And it's like for the first time I realized that "I am the good shepherd" is actually preceded by "I am the gate," or put another way, "I am the door." And I realize that in my hurry to get to the good shepherd, I tend to miss reflecting on Jesus the door, which is just a little bit ironic because I think I should be reminded of this whenever I look at the stained glass here at the front of the church. We have the good shepherd over there, and we have the door over here. And so there's been a hint there for me to look all along while I'm doing that this week. Doors are kind of interesting because they serve important functions, like they keep the elements out and they keep the heat in. I remember when I was traveling in Ireland some years ago, coming across an ancient church that's built all of stone. It's not that big. It's called the Gallus Oratory. It's about, when you go inside, about 15 feet by 10 feet inside. It's not big at all. It may date from as early as the 6th century, maybe a bit later. People are a bit uncertain about that. Someone has placed a large piece of leather over the entrance. The guess is that was what was used in the door as a door originally. And that reminds me that doors come in all shapes and sizes. I realized as I was sitting to think about this text that I think the most confusing of all doors are revolving doors. I find that entering through a revolving door is more of an exercise in survival. You know what I mean? Go now. Go now. Never quite sure when's the right time. And I always have this strange fear that it'll stop with me inside mid-revolution. You know, I'll be sitting there like I'm a pet in a store waiting to be purchased. You know, let me out. I realized I actually didn't know very much about revolving doors, so I did some research. I discovered that they originated in Germany in the early 1880s, and they soon became a very popular feature of this new thing that was coming out called skyscrapers, any building over 7 stories. And there was a good reason for that. As people started to build skyscrapers in the late 1800s, they discovered that the height and the design of the buildings, coupled with either heating air or trying to cool air conditioning, produces in the building a kind of a chimney effect. And so what you'd have is lower air pressure on the inside of the building than on the outside of the building. And they discovered that it made it really hard to open doors. into a skyscraper, because the higher pressure on the outside kept the door forced closed. And so we have the revolving door, and what a revolving door does is it creates kind of a seal, right? It's kind of an airlock, the way you get into a building. The other thing neat about revolving doors is they serve as a kind of security feature. You know, they provide good control for entry and exit of a building. And they typically limit entry to single individuals. Sometimes they only permit like one-way traffic too, which is another key purpose of the door, determining access. I think that's what Jesus was referring to in John chapter 10. Now, the way I understand it, in first century Palestine, there were a couple of different places you would normally gather sheep. If you were in a village and you were a shepherd, you'd likely take your sheep out into the countryside during the day, and then in the evening you'd bring them back to the town or to the village, and you would keep them in some sort of community animal pen. And that pen would be a solid structure, you know, solid walls, and it would have a door on it. And the town or the village might actually have someone to watch over that pen at night. The door would remain shut. Sometimes they would even put some sort of lock on it, make sure it didn't come open. And so the way you would then get into the fold was through that door. And so only a thief would actually hop over the wall. And we heard about that in the beginning of our gospel reading. There is another kind of sheepfold, though. At different times of the year, shepherds would take their sheep to graze in some far-off pastures. And so they were often at the substantial distance from home. So you wouldn't be going back in the evenings. They'd be gone for weeks. So there was still a need for some sort of security. And so folds would be built out in the countryside. And they'd be just walls with some sort of opening at one end. And that would permit the sheep to come and go. And in the evening, the shepherd would lead their sheep into the fold, and then they'd settle down for the night, lying in the entrance. They would lie across the doorway. And that would mean that any going to and fro would require the agreement of the shepherd. So the shepherd would actually serve as the door. Like I said, I think doors are kind of interesting. We have metal doors in our house. They're not that uncommon these days. We recently shifted over from wood doors. I think they hang a bit better. I don't know why, but they do. Church doors. Now that's a whole subspecialty for those interested in a rather obscure field of study. Will was telling me that the doors to Christ Church Cathedral in Victoria are really massive. They're big, thick doors. They're gates that are generally left closed for reasons of practicality. And opening and closing them is really, it's a bit of work. So the other thing is the result is these big doors are kind of intimidating to look at. So a decision was made a while back to leave those doors open, and they've mounted glass doors on the inside. So still keeps the heat in, you know. But they are now more transparent, and it's more welcoming to people. And I think that's pretty cool. One of the peculiarities of a good many older churches is the presence of a baptismal font near the front door. Throughout history, churches have often made the decision to remind all who enter through the door that baptism is the way we enter the church. And so they have the baptistry near the door. It's a doorway into the church. It's not something I've seen in many United churches, but it makes sense, I think. Our doors into the church hall here, they are highly functional. They're crash doors. They're designed for security on the outside and for emergency exits on the inside. Our front doors are those large wooden doors. I suspect they were designed for a more traditional look. And there's also some glass around them to make them slightly less imposing. They let lots of light in, so we have it's really quite nice and bright as you walk in. I'm always a little nervous. Sometimes churches can look like a fortress, and I'm not sure that gives people, especially newcomers, quite the welcome we might be wanting to offer them. On the other hand, in all honesty, our front door is more often locked than not. It's one of the signs of the times, I guess. when I was at the Crucifusion gathering a couple of weeks ago, I was talking to a colleague from Newfoundland, and she was telling me that the province is changing pretty fast in recent years. She told me about visiting a clergy friend midweek, working in a small community, and as they walked up to the door of the church, she was shocked, and I mean it, she was shocked, quite distressed to see him punching numbers into the alarm system for the church. And because it wasn't too long ago that she remembers the church would not only not have an alarm system, but it would never be locked. Then why would you need to lock a church? Well, here in our church, we have security people who check our doors every single night. And I don't think there are too many churches in our district that are left unlocked for any length of time anymore, which is kind of sad. Speaking of Newfoundland, I did a ministry internship there some years ago, and I was advised by my supervisor and then encouraged by my congregants to not pay too much attention to the door, but on the other hand, to make certain I knew through which door I was entering. Now, I know that sounds a bit confusing, so let me explain. There are lots of regional differences in Newfoundland, but this is the protocol in the part I was working in, and it works this way. If I was simply on a friendly visit, I would just arrive, I would head around to the back door of the house, I would put my head in the door, wouldn't knock, I would put my head in the door, and I would bellow out some sort of a greeting to let people know I was there. Dropping by was much encouraged, and I was warned that I needed to be prepared to eat no matter what the time of day, which explains why I gained 10 pounds in 4 months there. Now, if it was an official visit, then I was advised to come in the front door, and I was advised to knock. You do not just walk in then. Incidentally, what I didn't understand at the time, and at least not until I'd done it a number of times, was not to phone ahead. You did not phone ahead, because if you phoned ahead and then walked to the front door, it was assumed you were bringing bad news, like someone had died. Or you were there to call someone on the carpet for some inappropriate behavior. So it turned out for the first few weeks I was there, I was scaring people to death because I was knocking on the front door and they thought they were about to be either had their finger shaken at them or that someone had passed away. Who knew? Now, doors were especially important when I worked in the hospital, I found. They provided protection and they provided privacy for patients. Now I'm no longer authorized personnel. I don't work in the hospital anymore. And I confess to finding doors just a little intimidating when I'm in the hospital. If a door is closed now, I don't have the same comfort I used to have in opening it and walking in. The closed door in the hospital reminds me that I'm actually a stranger there. I'm a sojourner. And that's okay. But it just feels a bit odd having felt at home there for so long. So what's a door for? Is it to welcome people in or is it to keep people out? Is it an entrance or is it an exit? Are there many doors into a church or is there only one doorway into the church? On a variety of different levels, those are critically important questions for the church today. In today's gospel, Jesus tells us that he is the door. He's not a door. He says he is the door. And that gets my Inclusive United Church hairs all standing on end. And he also says that he's the good shepherd, suggesting to me that there might be some okay shepherds, and there might even be some not so good shepherds. And this designation good seems to be in some way connected with his willingness to lay down his life for his sheep, which is, when you stop to think about it, revealing of one pretty committed shepherd. But as you can see, I'm already being tempted to explore the shepherd motif again. And why not? It's a really wonderful description of Jesus. But in this passage, it actually all begins with him asserting that he is the door. And the door isn't especially grand-sounding, is it? The other I am statements have a little more weight to them. At least they seem to on first gloss. You know, I'm the bread of life. I'm the light of the world. I'm the resurrection and the life. The truth, the way, the truth, and the life. I'm the true vine. These are kind of weighty images. And of course, then there's, you know, before Abraham was, I am. And he sounds like God talking to Moses in the book of Exodus. I am who I am. But the door? Well, it's actually no less grand. A door is a way into something. And Jesus is saying that he is the door that leads to God. He is the way we get to understand God most fully. He is the way we get to God. Or I suspect more accurately, Jesus is the way God's chosen to come to us, to find us, to reveal God's self to us. Look at that stained glass. I love that picture. Even when, I know it hardly happens, but when my preaching is bad, please humor me. But even when the sermon fails miserably, you've always got the glass, right? It just preaches. It's an imperfect rendering of Holman Hunt's The Light of the World. And that was a picture that was painted some 160 years ago. The actual text here is a revelation of St. John, chapter 3, verse 20, which reads, "Listen, I am standing at the door knocking. If you hear my voice and open the door, I will come in to you and eat with you and you with me." I love that. It's inviting, it's encouraging. But I have to confess, I always find it a bit sobering when I remember which portion of the Bible that verse comes from. It's the portion of the Bible where Jesus is speaking to a particular church. It's the church in Laodicea. And he calls that church tepid and lukewarm. And he says, "I'm going to spit you out of my mouth. I'm going to vomit you up." Ouch. That's what's at the front of our church. And he's saying that he's giving them a chance to come around. And so while I love this stained glass, it always serves as a bit of a reminder. Has anyone seen the original I Am the Light of the World, the Holman Hunt one? I've seen a version of it at St. Paul's in London, which is a bit bigger, I'm told. He repainted it. He made the bigger version that went to St. Paul's. The original picture is smaller, and it's hanging in one of the colleges in Oxford. And as the name of that painting suggests, The Light of the World, in the original, our eyes are initially drawn to a lamp that Jesus is carrying. But in our stained glass, the way it's rendered here, as I said, it's an imperfect reproduction, where our eyes are drawn to the door. And curiously, that door is also the one who knocks. Jesus is the door. He's the door we trust is the way to God. And I find myself thinking, I mean, are there other doors? Are there other ways? In our North American context, where we're increasingly reluctant to make claim for anything being exclusively true, which strangely enough sometimes has the effect of making us doubt that anything is true, you end up having these odd conversations, you know, where someone talks about your truth and my truth, and often they're contradictory. Well, this talk about Jesus being the door, it can be sound a bit arrogant, really. And we do think about that. I know I do. I know you do. It's a good thing to keep in mind. And I would love to tell you I have a nice way of resolving this, of giving a good and comforting answer, but I don't. However, I do believe that the biblical story reveals a loving and a merciful God who goes to incredible lengths to have us, even to the point of dying for us. And you know, I trust that God. And I've also heard Jesus say now that he is the door, just as he makes other strong and demanding statements elsewhere in all four Gospels. But I'm choosing to trust that Jesus is speaking the truth and that these are not the words of some later zealous Christian interpreter putting those words into Jesus' mouth, because once you start down that road, it gets really hard to stop. So I choose to believe what we read here and trust in God's determination and Jesus' faithfulness to draw all people. I always love this. Draw all people to himself, and that he indeed saves those who enter through him. That he is who he says he is. That he is the door. And so here you are this morning. You came in through a door. Maybe you deliberately went out looking for the door, or maybe you stumbled in after it was opened for you. Or maybe you heard someone knocking and you opened the door wide out of curiosity and interest. There are lots of ways this happens. But you're here. You walk through the door. And I say thanks be to God. Amen.